Ackerbau und Viehzucht am Ende der Welt. Die Sedefields im County Mayo. Hallo, ich bin Chris, Reisefotograf und Podcaster. Heute von den Sedefields. Die Sedefields sind ein archäologisches Denkmal im äußersten Nordwesten Irlands, das aus mehr als 5000 Jahren menschlicher Geschichte besteht. Sie umfassen ein Gebiet von etwa 10 Quadratkilometern mit Steinmauern, Hütten, Gräbern, Felder und andere Spuren der prähistorischen Bewohner aus einer Zeit, in der das Klima hier im Norden Irlands im County Mayo viel milder gewesen sein musste, sodass hier sogar Ackerbau möglich gewesen ist. Die Sedefields wurden in den 30er Jahren entdeckt, und zwar, wie in Irland typisch, ähnlich wie bei den Moorleichen, werden solche Dinge bei Torfabbauarbeiten entdeckt, bei denen die Torfstecher auf alte Steinmauern stießen. Seitdem wurden zahlreiche archäologische Untersuchungen durchgeführt, um das Alter zu bestimmen und auch die Funktion und Bedeutung der Sedefields zu ermitteln. Heute sind die Sedefields ein nationales Denkmal und ein UNESCO-Weltkulturerbe. Sie sind für Besucher zugänglich und bieten auch ein Museum, Wanderwege, mehrere Aussichtspunkte, von denen aus Landschafts- und auch Naturfotografie möglich ist.
So, wir haben uns hier bei den Sedefields getroffen mit Greta Byrne. Byrne is correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Greta Byrne.
Greta Byrne. And she's showing us a bit around the fields, which are very special because they are the first fields that were discovered in Ireland that are about 10,000 years old. Is this correct?
Well, we think were built about 5,800 years ago, during a time what's called the Neolithic or the New Stone Age, a time when farming was practiced, but before any metal was discovered, so it comes before the Bronze Age. But the first evidence for the practice of farming in Ireland, on the island of Ireland, is just before 6,000 years ago. And then a couple of centuries later, there was a large population of farming people here, and they had settled this area of North Mayo and the beautiful Wild Atlantic Way overlooking the ocean, and conditions were very different then. The climate was different than it is now. It was a little bit warmer and drier. Of course, today here on the west coast of Ireland, we do get some rain and wind coming in off the Atlantic, but that's what makes it so special today. But between five and 6,000 years ago, it was a little bit warmer and drier, so very good conditions for farming then, and there was a large population of farmers living here. So they had the whole land divided up into fields that were used just for grazing of cattle. And then a lot of it would have looked pretty much like a lot of Ireland today, rural Ireland today, just green fields, cattle grazing in them. But of course here today, like on the west coast, it's all covered in a blanket of bog or peat. The reason we have it today is because we do have a very damp, wet climate. But because we do have that peat or bog here, that has preserved everything that was here from 5,500 years ago. So it has preserved all the stone walls that divided up the land into fields. And that is quite unique. Because everywhere, well, lots of other places, people may have been farming and were quite sure they were farming at the time throughout Ireland and certainly on continental Europe as well and in Britain. But there is nothing surviving anywhere else of that farmed landscape and how it was managed into fields, because the land has been farmed ever since. But here the bog has preserved it.
The exhibition also explains how people came to that region, but can you give a short overview?
Yes, well, We know in Ireland the very first settlement of people on the island of Ireland was around 10,000 years ago when people arrived who were, they had no knowledge of farming, they were living by hunting and fishing and gathering, particularly fishing, and they lived by the seashore and by lakes and rivers. They were here for a few thousand years, maybe a population in the whole country of only a few thousand people. But then around 6,000 years ago, new people arrived. They had to arrive by boat, obviously, we're on an island. But where they came from, where the very, very first farmers arrived from, we're not certain. But the latest theory or thinking is that they arrived from northwest France and arrived by boat towards Ireland. At the same time, the first farmers were arriving on, into Britain as well. So they may have, the very first people may have landed somewhere in the southern part of Ireland. In fact, it's quite possible there were initial people who arrived but didn't succeed in settling permanently. But certainly sometime before 6,000 years ago, people arrived and did succeed in settling here. And over the next couple of centuries, the population expanded and spread throughout Ireland, to, you know, almost to the whole of the island. And certainly here... In this part of the west coast in North Mayo, there was a large population of people living here. And we know that even without the cage of fields, without the field systems, we know that from the number of tombs, the megalithic tombs that they built in this area. There are a lot of them in this area. And there are, in fact, tombs, similar tombs throughout a lot of Ireland, throughout Britain as well, and even in parts of continental Europe as well. In northern Germany, there are some, in Denmark and the Netherlands, and right down through France and Spain and Portugal. But as I said, there is nowhere else where you have the contemporary land, the contemporary farmed land that those people were living in and farming. It hasn't survived anywhere else.
Is there a lot of DNA from that, from those people still in that region?
DNA?
DNA, is
it? Yes. Now, unfortunately, one of the things we don't have from Cage Fields are actually the human remains, because the soil under the bog is very acidic and bones don't survive. So we don't have any human bone material surviving from here to do DNA. But DNA has been undertaken on Neolithic bones from other parts of Ireland. And it is something that is a new avenue of research now. There's a lot of, you know, exciting discoveries being made through that. For example, the thinking now is that, because you know that the whole first initial, from a European perspective, the initial development of farming, the first domestication of animals and growing of crops began in the Middle East, you know, what is nowadays Iraq, Syria, that kind of area. And then it took a few thousand years for the practice of farming to spread right up through Europe and eventually get to Ireland and Britain around 6,000 years ago. But we know now from DNA evidence that the root of, you know, the ancestors of the Cage of Fields farmers and of the Irish farmers seems to have come up through the Mediterranean, kind of route, if you like, and through Spain and Portugal and up through France. And it, those were the ancestors of the people who came to Ireland.
What kind of cattle did they have, or kind of animals did they have?
The animals were here, certainly it was mainly cattle. They would have had some sheep or goats, some pigs as well, but here it was cattle. We know that from, well, first of all, we know that the land was mainly under grassland. We know that from pollen analysis, that when the farmers were here, it was nearly all grassland and weeds associated with grassland. Now, in recent years, we have new evidence as well. We have evidence from analysis of the pottery that was found. A lady called Jessica Smith has been analysing samples of the pottery, chemically analysing them, and she can identify lipids, or, you know, the fatty material, and distinguish whether that lipids came from either animal fat or from dairy products. And the pottery here, as indeed from many other Neolithic sites in Ireland as well, it has produced lipids from dairy products. So we know they were milking cattle here. And dairy products seem to have been an important part of the diet. We can't tell really, were they just drinking the milk, or were they processing it into type of butter or cheese maybe. But certainly they were milking the cows.
If people come here, how much time should they bring?
Well, we have an entirely new exhibition now, just literally opened a few days ago. There is a lot of information in it now that wasn't in our old exhibition. We would say at least allow a couple of hours to see the whole exhibition. There's a lot of different topics covered, a lot of different techniques used in presenting them. There's a lot of different videos and audio elements, a lot of interactive games and activities for children and children of all ages to do. And of course, we still do what we consider is the real Cage Fields experience, the guided walking tour outside on the windy hillside overlooking the beautiful Atlantic here. We still do the guided tours, and a tour would take, an average tour, maybe 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and the opening times?
The opening times every day at the moment from 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock. Now, the last admission is at 5:15, but open 7 days a week at the moment.
Okay, and you can get the details of the visit from your homepage?
Yes, our website is www.heritageireland.ie. That covers all of the visitor centres and heritage sites that are operated by the Office of Public Works.
So, thank you very much. Is there one thing people should focus if they don't have a lot of time? Here in the fields, for example.
If they don't have a lot of time, well, it's hard to say. Certainly, if the weather is good, I would like them to come out. But even if they don't have time to go on a full guided tour, which I said can take maybe nearly an hour, we do now have information panels, like beautifully produced information panels around the site. So they can walk, you know, take a quick walk around the site and just have a look at those information panels and at least get an experience of what the site looks like. And then they can take take a quick run through the exhibitions, just look at the headlines, look at the photographs, you know, at least get a quick, you know, they can get a short overview of what it's all about.
And you also have access for people that are not that good on food, you said.
Yes, all of the exhibitions are fully accessible. There is a separate place where cars can drive right up close to the building. There is a lift into the upstairs exhibitions. And outside on the site, because the site is on a steep hill slope, normally there are a lot of steps to walk. But if people are not able to do that, we now have a recorded guided tour on iPads, so people can sit inside in comfort and and experience the guided tour.
And drink a cup of coffee in your bistro.
Yes. Well, from the 4th of July onwards, we will have our cafe open. And yeah.
Did you have a lot of problems because of COVID? Probably wasn't closed, was it?
Yes, in 2020, the site was closed. The visitor centre was closed most of the year because of COVID lockdown. We were all locked down at one stage at 2 kilometres. There was also a total restriction. There was no construction work allowed for 5 or 6 months. So that did delay the finishing, the completion of the job. So that's why it only opened now in June, you know, rather than originally it would have been open in March. That was the intended time. But hopefully that's all behind us now. And it's great to have it finished at last. Yeah.
Are you from that region here, or did you move from?
I moicd here originally. I'm from County Wicklow, which is the east of the country. But I came here first as an archaeology student 40 years ago, a very young student. And I just fell in love with the place, and I just kept coming back every year, doing more and more work.
Okay, it's beautiful. So you also dug out some things here, or?
I'm sorry.
You also dug out some of the walls here.
Yes, I am an archaeologist myself. First I came as a volunteer, as a student working for Seamus Caulfield. He was my lecturer in college and he was the man who began the whole research here. So I was working originally for him as a volunteer on his excavations, and then on the surveying of the field walls, the finding of the walls and mapping them in. And then I went on to do some research myself as well. I surveyed an area just east of Ballycastle, located a lot of material there. I did that for a thesis, for a degree, and I also did excavations here before the visitor centre was originally built. I actually did the excavations on the ground before the builders moved in, and then after it opened, and I actually got the job managing the visitor centre.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So you really had a hands-on experience.
Exactly. Yes. Very much so. Yeah.
So. What was the most things that you have found next to walls?
As well as the actual field walls, there are a number of megalithic tombs which were used. Well, they were used as burial places, but they were also just ceremonial and religious, I suppose, focus for the community. And then there are also dwelling sites. So here you have the entire landscape. Like in other parts of the country, you will have the megalithic tombs will survive because they were built of great big heavy stones and couldn't be moved. But here you also, so it's really when you take everything all together as one integrated unit, if you like, that you have the whole landscape here. You know, we found many different things. For example, I excavated a megalithic tomb at Ratlachan, about 15 kilometres from the visitor centre here. We found a fantastic structure to the tomb, but we found it had been used over several centuries, originally built maybe about 5,600 years ago and used for a time, burials probably put in it. Then there was a period of several hundred years where there's no evidence of activity, but it was reused again for more burials and more activity. A small enclosure was built onto the side of it, a small structure, not quite sure what it was used for within the enclosure. And then it seemed to have been abandoned again and was used again in early Bronze Age times, where burials were placed, cremation burials in pottery urns, two were placed within the chambers, and then the whole tomb was completely sealed up with stones, all the chambers filled with stones, and the entrance and the court area in front of the chambers blocked with stones. So it just goes to show that, you know, the same site was, you know, these people, this was about 1,500 years after the tomb was originally constructed. It was still respected as a sacred place, if you like, you know, 1,500 years later.
But it was not the same clan.
No, it would have been, well, the people certainly had a different religious tradition, a different way of burying their dead and of honouring their dead. But that's not unusual in Ireland for sometimes our ancient monuments and older sites to be still respected and still regarded as special places or sacred places, if you like, sometimes thousands of years later. Like, it's not unusual for, say, Neolithic sites, you know, built maybe 5,000 or 6,000 years ago, to be reused in later times, in the Bronze Age times or Iron Age times. Or even we have a couple of cases of, you know, megalithic tombs almost 6,000 years old, which were used in, you know, in recent centuries to bury people or something, like, you know, sometimes unbaptized babies were not allowed to be buried in the consecrated church graveyards, but there are cases of some of those being buried in these megalithic tombs.
Okay.
And you know, you also get monuments in Ireland. For example, not far from here there's a lovely standing stone in Dunfini. The standing stone itself was probably a Bronze Age, possibly even Neolithic, but you know, at least as old as the Bronze Age, tall standing stone. But it was Christianized in early Christian times by carving two crosses on it. Again, at least a couple of thousand years after the stone was there. And in fact, the crosses would have been carved in early Christian times around 6th or 7th century. Then there was a church, there was a medieval church there. There is presently the ruins of a more recent church, and it was used as a burial place. In fact, it's still, there's still one or two graves still in use in it. So that same site used over maybe 4,000 to 5,000 years.
What I discovered when I was at, for example, Kalkhill, I hope I pronounce it correctly, that you also had those trees where they put linen, pieces of linen or textile. So it's still a sacred place for that.
Yes, yes, yes. And some of these traditions are still there. And for example, Downpatrick Head, that we're looking across at here, Downpatrick Head, the fabulous place with the separate sea stack at the end with sheer vertical cliffs all around it. The sea stack is about, I think it's about 80 metres from the mainland. The only possible way to get onto it now is by helicopter. Mm-hmm. But there's the ruins of two houses on top of that, that are there from 600 years ago, from the 14th century. And we know that from historical annals, that there was people living there in the 14th century. It was a massive big storm. The land collapsed and it formed an island. There was just no way off. It said they were rescued by ropes.
Okay.
But ever since, with the force of the Atlantic, there's more and more erosion all the time, and the gap is getting wider. But the interesting thing is that there's a lot of mythology about that, that says it was formed by St. Patrick. Now, we like to believe that. That St. Patrick, yeah. St. Patrick, there was a pagan god or chieftain there called Crumdov. Crumdov had a sacred fire lighting to the pagan gods. Patrick struck the fire with his crozier, and the whole land fell away, and Crumdov was left on the island. So, and it's called Downpatrick Head. So we like to believe that rather than the real history, that it's only from 600 years ago.
Yeah, but there's always a glimpse of truth, isn't it?
Yes.
What I learned, that you still, even if you have that fantastic part of a story, that there's still a little bit of truth in that.
Sure. Yeah. Yes, but a lot of the Irish landscape is like that. Even from here now, you can look across to Sligo. There, of course, Sligo. A lot of Neolithic monuments there as well. For example, at Carramore, there's Neolithic burial monuments. On Knocknarea Hill, there's a massive cairn.
But it hasn't been excavated.
No. But presumably it covers a large passage tomb similar to Newgrange, maybe. But the mythology says it's the burial place of Queen Maeve. And maybe that's a more dramatic story. And maybe the fact that it's not excavated, you know, it just adds to the mystery. We can believe Maeve is there.
But it's a wonderful place. We didn't go up there because it was very wet. And it was a bit dangerous with the kids.
Something
next time.
Yeah. Well, there's always more. You can never possibly see everything.
If you talk about sites at the moment, what is your favorite site around here? Next to the place you're standing on?
Well, I suppose my favourite archaeological site would be Ratlachan Court's tomb, because I excavated it and I found a lot of material around it. I feel I have a personal connection to it. But I love the whole area. Certainly Downpatrick Head is spectacular. I love to go walking on the bogs as well. And sometimes Well, always, no matter what time of the year, the bogs, when you walk on them, the huge variety of vegetation is beautiful, and there is a fantastic variety of vegetation. When you look at them just in the distance, they look a uniform colour, but when you walk and see them close up, you can see all the heathers, all the grasses, the sedges, the flowering plants, the mosses, the lichens, and there's different plants in bloom at different times of the year. Now, at this time of the year in June, you can see some white bog cotton, that grass with the white fluffy heads on it, bog cotton. The heather is not in bloom yet. It'll be in bloom later on in summer when it's all just purple. At this time of the year, there are small flowers. You can see some little yellow flowers there, little tormentals. There are some sundews as well, plants that eat the insects. But even in winter time, it can be beautiful, particularly if you get a sun shining on it all. The grasses and that, they're kind of a golden and a coppery colour. But
do you get snow here in winter time?
No. Actually, very seldom get snow. Because we're right on the edge of the Atlantic, the actual average temperature in the winter time is quite mild, because the nights are quite mild, being beside the sea. But it can often feel cold, all right, because we get strong wind, and the wind chill factor makes it feel cold. But the actual average temperature is warmer along by the coast. Like, certainly the average winter temperature is warmer than further inland. So snow or frost or ice, it's not very much here. In fact, last winter, I think only once we got snow.
Yeah. Okay. What is that structure here?
This this collapsed stone wall here, it's similar to the field boundaries that you see everywhere, just a collapsed dry stone wall, but this one forms a little oval shaped structure. Now, we excavated this, well, we only discovered it when we were excavating what we thought was just a straight field wall before the visitor centre was built. We found this carving structure. At first we thought maybe it was the ruins of a dwelling house where people were living, but when we excavated that section there, we found nothing inside it, no charcoal or evidence of a fire or no artefacts. Now, we didn't completely excavate it, we've left part of it, so maybe in future there might be better techniques. Somebody can maybe discover what it was, but we call it, we think maybe it was used for animals. It may even have been where they brought in the cows to milk them, mm-hmm. or maybe at times when there were young calves, because there would have been wolves and brown bears in Ireland at the time. You know, maybe it had a roof on it, maybe they could be protected there, but it's in archaeology, there's a lot of guesswork.
There is no clear cause why people left here, or because I know from Heineburg, which is in Germany, you had a problem with that they merged or they had iron, and for iron making process you need lots of wood, and the wood was getting scarce.
Yeah, well, here what happened was the conditions changed, climate changed, it was getting colder and wetter, the soil changed gradually, the bog, the peat began to develop, and of course as that happened, the vegetation that's on the bog, of course, most of it can't be digested by domestic animals, it's heathers and mosses and vegetation like that, so the land was just no longer able to support the animals and to support the people, and there seems to have been a decline of population. We're not sure what happened to people as such. Was there, you know, a declining population that the people died out over a while? But obviously not everybody died. Population did continue in the wider area, but certainly here in this particular area, the population, you know, just declined. And even today, you know, there are very few people here even today. Now, if you went say about 30 kilometers to the west here and 30 kilometers inland, there's hardly any houses. You know, you could walk from here, set off walking here, and walk for many hours and not set foot on any human, like present day human, evidence of human activity. So it's effectively uninhabited. So there were more people living here in Neolithic times than there are now.
Yeah, probably because of fishing, cattle.
Today, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, traditionally in this area, yeah, there are the local villages are Ballycastle to the east here, Balderig to the west. They would have had fishing piers, particularly Balderig, and further on there's Portarlin and Portatlai, small fishing villages. Not so much nowadays. Small-scale farming, mainly sheep at the moment, because the land is not good enough for cattle. So you will see some small-scale sheep farming. But of course, today now generally people will travel to go to jobs or whatever, rather than purely depending on the land or the sea
or online.
Well, exactly. Yeah, certainly that is becoming more common now, particularly since the COVID lockdowns.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of being somewhere like here. You can enjoy all this beauty and fresh air, and peace and quietness, and still maybe work away at your job.
Yeah, I saw that you have internet access. It's a great thing. So enjoy the view of Downpatrick and also see and enjoy.
Oh, yes. And if you know things as years go by, certainly things change in many ways. I mean, even a couple of years ago, who would have thought that we could all be locked down and told not to go more than 2 kilometres or 5 kilometres from your house? But I was very lucky. My house was within 5 kilometres of Downpatrick Head and the sea and the coast.
That's nice.
The bogs, and the local hills, and the forest and the beach.
One of them.
Yeah.
So, but other countries were not so fortunate.
Yeah.
But hopefully, we get over with that disease. And
yes. Hopefully.
Hopefully it works out.
Yeah. But of course, nobody knows.
Yeah.
Hopefully, there won't any worse viruses come along or something.
Should we go to another spot?
Okay.
Do you have time?
Up here, the site of a dwelling house.
Okay.
If you want, just a quick minute.
Yeah, that would be cool. But your signs are beautifully made. Lots of nice pictures. Really aesthetic.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Your signs are really aesthetic.
Oh yeah.
So the surrounding areas of the museum or of the fields, they're all privately owned, or do they belong to the state?
This area here, where we're walking around, it's fenced off. This is owned by the state now as part of the visitor centre, but it's only a tiny, tiny fraction of, it's only about 20 hectares. It's only a tiny fraction of the whole site. On the other side of the fence there, that's privately owned by different farmers.
How long did they take to refurbish the fields? 2 years, huh? Did it take to restore?
About 1.5 years from the start of the building work to the opening now.
And you got a few prizes for that too, for the exhibition.
Yes, well, or the original visitor centre, when it was opened in 1993, it got an award called the Gold Medal for Architecture. Quite a prestigious award for architecture. The original designer was a lady called Mary McKenna from the Office of Public Works, and that award is only given once every 3 years, and it's open to all kinds of buildings. As you can see, it's kind of a pyramid shaped building. There's vegetation growing up on the outside. So when you see it from the distance, it looks like it's just growing out of the hillside. I suppose it was a difficult thing to design a building, like a large building, for a landscape like this that wouldn't
dominate.
You know, yeah, that wouldn't look out of place. But I think she was very successful in that. It also means that with the glass, the top of the pyramid has a glass dome, so people can go up there to the roof, either inside or outside, and even if the weather is bad, they can still look out from inside, look out through the glass and see the view over the entire 360 degrees all around.
The rural side, the closures, the funeral monuments are very close to the fields normally.
Well, they were, the fields were all around the funeral monuments. The megalithic tombs, the monuments, were just built within the fields. Sometimes there are other types of tombs, like passage tombs, that were built in what seemed to have been areas that were separate from the lived-in landscape, you know, separate, maybe sacred spaces that were reserved for the funerary monuments and for the ritual monuments, or maybe built up on top of a hill where it was overlooking everywhere. But here, the particular type of...
Deine Fee.
They weren't set apart from like that. They were just built within, literally within the fields.
Because fields were also sacred land?
Well, no, not so much, but I think they were just part of, it was just part of the everyday life. You know, it wasn't a place apart where you went maybe only on occasions, like a pilgrimage or for ceremonies at particular times. They were there every day, so maybe they were more conscious of it every day. The cattle would have been grazing in the fields around them, the farmers would have been tending to their cattle and walking past the funerary monuments every day. The children may be, you know, climbing up on them and playing around them. So, you know, there wasn't that separateness. It was a part of everyday life.
And you're standing before or in front of the Glenora enclosure?
Yes, this is it's a stone wall. You can see a stone wall built around into a circle. It was excavated by Seamus Caulfield. It was the first excavation he did here 50 years ago now. He discovered that there had been a dwelling house within this. A number of post holes were found, the evidence of a wooden structure. There's nothing visible of them now, but it was some kind of a wooden house, maybe like that. Samples of charcoal were radiocarbon dated to 5,500 years ago. The artifacts found were all stone items, pottery, all typical Neolithic items. So at the time, it was very significant because it was the first indication of how old these stone walls under the bog were. And it was quite maybe surprising at the time that they were in fact Neolithic in date. But of course that has been validated since within the last 50 years. There's been lots more of research that has in fact proved that they truly are Neolithic in date.
Wow. What a bit of history in such a field.
Yes, there is certainly a lot of history and prehistory within this very small area. But you could spend a week here and not see all of it.
But there's still excavation going on here?
Not actual excavations at the moment. We'd love to be able to do more modern excavations now, but unfortunately we don't have the funding for that. But there is research going on that is relevant to here. For example, I just mentioned the analysis of the pottery for chemical analysis for lipids. So that was done just within the last couple of years, but done on pottery that was excavated 50 years ago, some of it from the site here in front of us. So there's still new discoveries being made without having to, you know, dig up the ground again. there's still a lot of potential there.
Wow. Wow. I'm amazed.
Vielen Dank, dass du mit dabei warst. Vielleicht hast du ja mal Lust, mit uns zu kommen und Irland zu entdecken und zu fotografieren. Es gibt auch eine Facebook-Gruppe Erlebnis Irland. Und ansonsten wünsche ich dir einen ganz, ganz tollen Tag, einen ganz, ganz tollen Abend, ein ganz, ganz tolles Wochenende, wenn es gerade, wenn du diesen Podcast, diese Episode am Wochenende hörst, oder auch eine tolle Woche. Bis bald, dein Chris und...